I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the newest member of your general service staff in New York City. Before we begin the meeting, I wonder if we could have a moment of silent prayer in gratitude for the past 30 years of sobriety in AA. And at the end of that, we will recite the Serenity Prayer together. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. First, I'd like to welcome all of you and welcome our speakers this morning. And before we begin, for the benefit of any non-AA members who may be here, I would like to read something about the anonymity tradition. There may be some of you who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. If so, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker or member be identified by full name in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help other alcoholics, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. I would also like to remind you that we request that no pictures be taken. I have a few announcements. Please mail it to us at the General Service Office, and we will ask him to do this. All Alcathon meetings, except for the midnight one, will be held in the roof garden. Pictures and tapes may be obtained in the Toronto room. We are running out of programs, so if you have any extras, please give them to the information or registration booth. Perhaps in the case of husbands and wives, you may have two, and you'd be willing to turn in one of those. Pleasure today to introduce the chairman of the meeting, whose name is Bruce Ann. He was elected to the Board of Trustees of General Service in April 1964, following nomination at a conference electoral session where he was Ohio's candidate for the East Central region. He is presently president of Ohio Edison Company, Akron, Ohio, with which he became associated as general counsel in 1948. He has been an active member of Ohio Group since 1945. His current group is the King School Group of Akron. Now I'll give you Bruce.
Hi, everybody. It's a great pleasure for me to be able to be chairman of this meeting this morning. Those of you who have read the program, and I'm sure all of you have or you wouldn't be here, will realize and recognize the title of this morning's discussion is Helpful Allies in the Field of Alcoholism. When I first read this title, it seemed to me that it was somewhat anomalous because, as we all know, AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, creed, and so forth. AA takes no positions on any public problems and engages in no controversial issues. And so it seemed to me that the word ally connoted something perhaps a little stronger than may have been intended. Also, when I read this title, I was reminded of the era, if I may call it that, when I first came to AA, which was in 1945. And after I'd had a couple of years of association with AA, I was asked to participate on a panel discussion which was sponsored by the Ohio Department of Public Health And on the panel, among others, was a doctor, a psychiatrist from Western Reserve University Medical School. Part of his talk dealt with the relationship with the doctors to AA. And I may say that the good doctor was very critical in one aspect. He said that it seemed to him that many of the AAs, and I think he put it most, really, played as though they were God, and this upset him no end. Those of you who were associated with AA back in those days, I think will well recall that the attitude of AAs generally was that there wasn't any remedy for the disease of alcoholism except Alcoholics Anonymous. And therefore, our attitude seemed to be the doctors, both internal medicine and those doctors of psychiatry, couldn't help us. The ministers couldn't help us. The social workers couldn't help us. Nobody could help us except Alcoholics Anonymous. And accordingly, we became pretty smug. And I think over the years we have come to change that position very dramatically. I think some of us forget that prior to the time that AA was founded, a great deal of research was being done in the field of alcoholism at the Yale School of Applied Physiology, for example, among others. It seems to me that during the early years of AA, there seemed to be, and I use this word which has become very popular among statisticians these days, seems to me there was an explosion in the field of alcoholism and what can be done about it. In any event, I think you will all recognize the fact that during the past 20 years, not only because of AA and the very fine favorable publicity that AA has received over this period of time, but also because of the good work of other agencies, alcoholism has been accepted as being a disease of the body, of the mind, or both, in the same light that other diseases have been accepted as such. And today the stigma attached to an alcoholic isn't quite the same as it was 20 years ago, thanks to these people. Now, of course, even though AA wants to and does cooperate with a number of these other agencies, and I'm speaking not only of such groups as Al-Anon groups, which is very close to AA, but also some of the tax-supported agencies and other interested people from universities and so on, we want to cooperate with them, and yet we have to do this in the light of the 12 traditions of AA, particularly the four traditions, the fifth one, which, as you recall, states in substance that each group has but one primary purpose, to try to carry our message to alcoholics. The seventh tradition, which says that we are self-supporting and that we decline outside contributions. The tenth, which says we hold no opinions on outside issues. And finally, the 11th, which covers our tradition of anonymity. Within the limitations of these restrictions, we are delighted to cooperate with all of these people who have a common interest with us, and that is to try to help the alcoholic who is still suffering from alcoholism. And perhaps some of you will remember that in 1959, the General Service Conference adopted a resolution in which it expressed appreciation to the various agencies dealing with alcoholism as well as a willingness to cooperate with such agencies, but short of actual affiliation. Now, we are very privileged this morning to have three persons on our panel discussion. The first of these is Mr. Ralph W. Daniel, who is Executive Director of the Michigan State Board of Alcoholism. Prior to Mr. Daniel's appointment as Executive Director of the Michigan State Board of Alcoholism, he had worked as an educational consultant with the State Department of Mental Health, as Chief Probation Officer of Muskegon County Juvenile Court, as psychiatric social worker in child guidance clinics in Lansing and Muskegon, Michigan, as a clinical social worker at the Boys Vocational School, as a social worker in Gratiot County Bureau of Social Aid. He is a graduate of Alma College, was awarded a Master of Social Work degree by the University of Michigan. He has also been awarded certificates by the Yale University Summer School of Alcohol Studies and by the University of Wisconsin Conference on Alcohol Studies, and has served on the faculties of both of these courses. Mr. Daniel is a past officer of the North American Association of Alcoholism Programs, past president of the Association for the Advancement of Instruction of Alcohol and Narcotics, a past chairman of the Jackson-Lansing chapter of the National Association of Social Workers, and secretary for the Michigan Institute of Alcoholism Programs. He's been the author of a number of articles that have been published in professional journals in the field of alcoholism. It's my pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you at this time Mr. Ralph W. Daniel. Ralph?
I had planned on starting out by saying thank you, Bruce. But I'm not going to say that because I feel as though I had been somewhat betrayed. Now, in preparation for this program, they asked us to write out our talks and send it in to General Service Headquarters. Well, what apparently they have done, they have given my speech to Bruce, and Bruce has just given you my speech. I want you to know that all of the brilliant things that he said, I've got written down here, and I wrote them first. Now, Bruce told you some things about the speaker. I want to tell you some things about the speech. I'm going to read a written speech, and it has 12 pages. Now, listening to a written speech is not so bad if you can keep record of how many pages have already been read and you know how many more have to come yet. This speech with 12 pages is double-spaced, incidentally. And from time to time, I'll let you know what the score is and how much more there is to endure. One of the reasons that I wrote this speech out was that I thought maybe the Saturday Evening Post or Harper's would like to buy this speech. And I wanted to be all ready. One more thing about this speech. We have in Michigan a rehabilitation program where there are a bunch of wonderful clergymen in the process of facing the problem of alcoholism and deeply concerned about these problems. Sometimes when I have a real important talk coming up, I sit down with these men and let them know the things I plan on saying, and then these gentlemen of the clergy sort of pasteurize my remarks and take out all the dirty jokes, and they tell me the things that won't go over and the things that will. I had a real brilliant speech prepared for you, but these men so took it apart that what you get now is a watered-down version. Well, anyhow, here's the speech as my secretary wrote it. One score and 10 years ago, Mother Ethyl Alcohol brought forth upon this continent two babies. One child was born in Akron, Ohio, and is known the world over as Alcoholics Anonymous. The other child was born in New Haven, Connecticut. It has not been as famous as AA, but it now shows promise of making a real contribution to mankind. The New Haven child of Mother Ethel does not really have a name. So for the purpose of this talk, I'm going to call the New Haven child of Mother Ethel Scientific Approaches. Just about the same time that Bill and Bob were first asking each other, what can we do about our inability to drink like other people? A small group of scientists at Yale University were asking each other, why does alcohol affect different people in different ways? Alcoholics Anonymous and the scientific approaches have led quite different lives. AA took an aggressive attack on alcoholism. AA learned by trial and error. AA worked and AA succeeded and AA failed. You have built up an amazing amount of experience. From this experience, you have extracted 12 steps, and you have proved an effective method of helping alcoholics. Now, the scientific approach did not start out to help alcoholics. You might say that the scientific approach was an egghead approach. These people started out by filling test tubes and studying statistics and studying literature and conducting research, but they were not basically helping alcoholics. Now, I don't need to talk to you about the Akron child of Mother Ethel. AA is part of you, and you are a part of it. Many of you owe your very lives to AA. And without AA, many of you would be dead and gone, and your widows would be paying off the debts. Now you're here to pay off the debt yourself. It would be easy for me to take my entire time this morning talking about how wonderful I think AA is. If this were your 10th anniversary, I would spend my time singing the praises of AA. But a 30th birthday is no time to talk baby talk. The things you say to a small child are not the same things that you say to an adult. Let me sum up my feelings about AA with this simple statement. I consider that the opportunity to participate in this conference is one of the greatest honors that has ever come to me. Now, I can see possibility that you folks out there will start making plans to assassinate the program chairman who invited me, but that's the responsibility that he took. Most of you have felt the need to acquaint judges and lawyers and clergymen and the general public with an understanding of AA. I propose to you that it is important that professional people become acquainted with AA. But I would also suggest that it is just as important that AA members become acquainted with the professional approach to alcoholism. The scientific approach to alcoholism has been a slow approach compared to AA. It began with a collection of knowledge. It built up a large body of new information, and it found the answer to many of the questions that it asked. People who studied man and alcohol were not content just to collect information. They taught many thousands of professional people, and these people in turn are beginning to test that knowledge in real life problems. The professional people are just beginning to use the alcoholism knowledge that has been built up to help alcoholics. all over the United States and Canada, there are professionally trained people who have become acquainted with the scientific information about alcoholism, and they are fitting this information into their own professional skills. There are many hundreds of non-alcoholics who are devoting full time to meeting the problems of alcoholism. There are good educators, good physicians, good psychiatrists, good clergymen, good administrators, good social workers who are working in alcoholism treatment centers, alcoholism information centers, and in hospitals. There are, in our countries, thousands of professionally trained people who include alcoholics along with other sick people in their clientele. These allies of AA are not as effective as AA in the number of their successes. Their skills with alcoholics are not as well tested as are the skills of AA. But their experiences will improve in time, and the numbers of their successes will also improve. I think that Alcoholics Anonymous and the professional approach to alcoholism have each had a rather interesting effect on the other. There has been no alliance, as Bruce suggested. There has been no formal affiliation between the children of Ethel. But each one has helped the other in subtle but effective ways. While science was developing its knowledge about alcoholism, AA was developing dramatic proof for the need of that knowledge and for the human and economic rewards that were in store for us when the knowledge was fully working. You have supplied for society the proof that helping alcoholics is a worthwhile and profitable thing to do. The tax money that goes to support alcoholism education, research, and treatment goes there partly because AA has demonstrated the values of helping alcoholics, and partly because professional people are willing to devote their skills and knowledge to establishing alcoholism programs. The community chest money and the private money that go into alcoholism programs stand as a testimony to the faith of the donors that alcoholism is a treatable illness. And AA has had a big part in creating that faith by demonstrating that alcoholics are not hopeless. If it were not for AA, the professional approach to alcoholism would be an isolated, poorly financed, uncoordinated, sporadic dream that was still a century away from helping anyone. AA is the sunshine that has warmed the soil and made possible the growth of your allies in the professional field. On the other hand, AA has profited from the work of the allies in the professional fields. This is one of the points that Bruce stole from my talk. Professional educators have done much to make people aware that alcoholism is a respectable disease. And this knowledge has helped many alcoholics to admit that they too are powerless over alcohol. Members of the helping professions, aware of the incompleteness of their therapies, have introduced thousands of new people into AA. The followers of the scientific approach have done much to open the doors of court chambers, personnel offices, hospitals, and many of you have found help with your 12-step work because these doors were open. We have gained much knowledge about alcoholism from studies involving alcoholics. Many members of AA have been part of these studies, and this has produced knowledge which has been valuable both to AA and to the scientific approaches. AA and the scientific approaches have not always loved each other like brothers. Many times we have quarreled like brothers. We have looked at you and we have said, you gain sobriety, but you don't know what to do with it when you get it. There is some truth in this statement, but it applies to your extremist and not to the average AA member. We have looked at you and we have said, sobriety should be a method whereby an alcoholic can live a full life. But you have made sobriety a major goal in life, and you spend your lives as though society expects nothing more of you than just to be sober. This is true of some AA members, but it applies to your extremists and not to your average member. We have looked at you and we have said alcoholism is a straitjacket that prevents man from normal living. And AA is made up of people who live in a nut house bragging about the way they escaped from the straitjacket. Any time that these people spend laughing comes off my half hour. Now, this observation is not without some basis, but this applies to your extremists and not to your average member. We have said you have made a religion out of AA and you have deified your founders. This is true, but only of your extremists. We have looked at AA and we have said you have seen only a small part of the alcoholism problem, and yet you set yourself up as the experts. This is a valid criticism of some of you, but these are your extremists. We have looked at AA and we have said you expect the professionals to be your helpers and to work only with the jobs that you assign to them, and you discourage any treatment that does not fit into your patterns and beliefs. This is a just criticism of some of you, but these are your extremists. Many of us who have come from the scientific approach to work on alcoholism problems have singled out your extremists and criticized AA as though the whole fellowship were made up of extremists. But some members of AA have been equally as inadequate, equally guilty of generalizing on inadequate evidence. You have looked on physicians and social workers and ministers who have not yet learned to use their skills in helping alcoholics, and you have said professional people cannot help alcoholics. This may be true of most professional people, but it is not fair to denounce the professional approach because some people are ineffective. You have looked at professional alcoholism workers and you have said these people think you have to have a college degree in order to help alcoholics, and they ignore the success of AA. This is true of our extremists, but they are not all extremists. You have seen professional people make serious mistakes with alcoholics, and you have criticized these mistakes and acted as though the professional therapist does nothing but make mistakes. I think that AA and the professional approaches to alcoholism have each hurt themselves and spent valuable time criticizing each other like jealous brothers. Incidentally, this is the end of page 6. Two of the children of Mother Ethel have lived for 30 years quarreling with each other and helping each other. What lies ahead? What can we expect? Can we go on for the next 30 years like we have gone on the first 30 years? I think not. I predict these changes. The general public will come to accept alcoholism as an honorable illness. Scientific knowledge will continue to filter down to the treatment people, and doctors and social workers and clergymen will become more effective in their treatment of alcoholics. Employers, law enforcement offices, and judges will come to recognize alcoholism as a respectable illness that caused people to break laws and lose jobs, and they will recognize that alcoholism can be successfully treated. And the fourth prediction, alcoholism will be understood as a human problem more like other human problems than we now believe. And alcoholics will be treated more like other sick people. Now, suppose that we could accept these four predictions as possibilities. Then I think we need to ask ourselves, must AA change? I think there's only one sane answer. Yes. The Apostle Paul once wrote these words, "When I was a child, I thought as a child, I spake as a child, and I understood as a child. But now that I have become a man, I have put away childish things." The two children of Mother Ethel have thought like children, talked like children, and quarreled like children. It's just about time that we became men and put away these childish things. Here are some of the childish games that I think we had better quit playing. Physicians have been playing a game called Blind Man's Bluff. And AA members have been playing like they were doctors. Some members of your fellowship have been playing nurses, while the real nurses were playing like they didn't even see alcoholics. While the ministers played a game called Hide the Bottle, some AA members played like they were preachers. AA members have played like they were school teachers, while the real school teachers played a game called Scare the Children. Employers have played a game called Pamper, Punish, and Fire, while recovering alcoholics played like they were operating employment agencies. AAs have played like policemen, when the real policemen were playing like drunks were punching bags in a game called Crime and Punishment. Society has played a game called Sweep Them Under the Rug, while AA played housemaid. AA has played a game called King of the Mountain, while they shoved down anyone who challenged their position. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous was born at a time when people in the other helping professions were passing by on the other side. AA stepped in to do the other guy's job. I propose to you that it is high time that we demand that the doctors do the doctoring, the nurses do the nursing, the police do the policing, the employers do the employing, the judges do the judging, the preachers do the preaching, and the social workers do the social working, and AA carries the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I say that AA must change. Perhaps this is not what I really meant. It may be better to say some A members must change the things they have been doing in the name of AA. I think AA members must accept some change. Your allies will eventually provide for alcoholics the same type of treatment they provide for other sick people, and they will provide these services better than AA members can provide them. I do not believe that the professionals will ever be able to do the total job alone, and I don't believe that AA members will ever be able to do the total job alone. All of us must put away our childish games and talk and think and act like grown-up men. This does not mean any change in the 12 steps nor the 12 traditions. I see no change in the successful methods of AA. I'm really saying that the whole attitude of our society towards alcoholics is changing, and AA members must adapt to the changing environment. 30 years ago, the only available help for alcoholics was AA. There's something personally satisfying about being part of the only hope of mankind. Deep down inside, I think we all get a great deal of comfort from the feeling that we are the only ones who can help. I think it's easy to kid ourselves and think that God gave AA total responsibility for helping alcoholics, and that anyone else who wants to can be little helpers who help AA do its God-given task. But allies are not just helpers. They're partners. Good allies use different methods, and they work in different areas, and they use different tools. We all have the common goal of helping alcoholics return to normal lives. None of us is yet effective with all alcoholics, and each of us may succeed where the other has failed. Some AA members and some professional members must learn the hard way to share the responsibility of treating alcoholics. I notice that some of you are getting pretty bored and some of you are sleeping. And I still have 3 more pages to go. I want to offer for those of you who find this very boring a little challenging thing that you can do while you bow your head and close your eyes. We live on a very small lake, and there are too many weeds in this lake. And as the motorboats go through this lake, they chop the weeds up, and they float to the top, and they rest in the hot sun, and they ferment. This means, of course, that alcohol is created. Now, those of you who are bored with the talk and want something else to do, would you try and find some way we can commercialize on this? I will furnish all the raw materials. Page 10. I propose to you that there is one lesson that we all have yet to learn. I suggest that none of us can be truly mature until we learn this lesson. We will never be truly adult until we can stand on our own two feet and speak out loud and clear and say words like these: I am a human being, a child of God, and a brother to other human beings. You and I, alcoholics and non-alcoholics, have overemphasized our differences, and we have failed to recognize that we are more alike than we are different. We live in a world where there are struggles between black people and white people, because both blacks and white are not mature enough yet to recognize that they are more alike than they are different. We live in a world where there are struggles between capitalism and communism, because we have not grown up enough to recognize that capitalists and communists are more alike than they are different. We live in a world where there are conflicts between labor and management, because neither labor nor management is yet ready to recognize that we are all human beings, and human beings have more similarities than they have differences. We live in a world where there is a conflict between democracy and totalitarianism, because the advocates of each type of government fail to recognize that our similarities far outweigh our differences. We live in a world where alcoholics and non-alcoholic therapists cannot mature until we recognize that we are more alike than we are different. We live in a world where there is conflict between youth and adult, and we will continue to live with that conflict until we truly learn that we are all human beings and our differences are relatively minor. You and I and the communists and the black people and the white people and the laboring people and the management people and alcoholics and physicians and nurses and clergymen and the social workers and the rich and the poor, we're all more alike than we are different. And we will remain as little children until we can each stand on his own two feet and say, I am a human being, and so are you. Cut any of us, and we bleed. Strike any of us, and we bruise. Offend any of us, and we either strike back or we run away. Deny us food and clothing and shelter and love and attention and recognition, and we suffer. Take away our air, and we die. We all want the same basic things from life, and each must learn that the best way to get what he wants is to join with others to help all mankind get what each human being wants. Now, I would not for a moment deny that there are differences among human beings. My point is that we must learn to see our differences and our similarities in their proper relationship. You, for instance, sit at this moment with dozens of other people who are human beings who have many things in common. Most of you have admitted that you were powerless over alcohol and that your lives had become unmanageable. Most of you came to believe that a power greater than yourselves could restore you to sanity. These things have brought you together in this great international convention. AA is a powerful source for good, because thousands of you have learned that you had much in common and that by emphasizing your similarities, you could make progress against man's most neglected health problem. Still, you as an individual have not lost your individuality. I think it's foolish to say that all alcoholics are alike. For the last 20 minutes, for instance, you have heard the same words. And yet, to each of you, they have had a different meaning. Some of you, I'm sure, have been wishing that you'd gone into another section this morning. Some of you have been hoping that the next speakers would have something to say. Some of you have been planning vacations. Some of you have been making plans to lynch the program committee. But you're all different. And yet your strength comes from an emphasis on your similarities. The allies of AA and the members of AA have many differences. They also have many similarities. The two children of Mother Ethel, born 30 years ago, can become truly mature just as soon as we can recognize that we are more alike than we are different.
Daniel, I think the applause from the audience speaks much louder than anything that I could say in connection with your very timely words of suggestion, if I may be so bold, words of advice. Now, when Mr. Daniel started off and said he had 12 pages to read, I couldn't help but think of the story that Tom Sharp told at the last General Service Conference of the drinking alcoholic who went to Miami, Florida, and he met one of his friends in the hotel lobby, and his friend said, "Come on in, we'll have a drink." And the alcoholic said, "No, thank you, I don't have time. I only expect to be here a month." I hasten to assure you, Ralph, that the minutes that you used up in giving us this very fine message didn't take a month. And I, for one, if I could speak officially, which I can't, for AA, in fact, sometimes I'm not so sure I can even speak officially for myself. But if I could, I would say amen to everything you said. And I'm delighted that you went to such pains to point out that some of the criticisms that you directed towards this fellowship were directed really towards a minority of this fellowship, the extremists, as you put it. Some years ago in the Journal of Alcoholic Studies, that was published by the Yale people, there appeared an article which was written by a man named Ritchie, Oscar Ritchie, who did this article as his master's thesis at Kent State University. This paper was based on his research in AA for of AAs, and the paper was entitled Alcoholics Anonymous. And as part of the research for the paper, Mr. Ritchie interviewed a great many persons associated with AA, both in New York and in Akron in the Cleveland area. And at the conclusion of the article, he raised some rather pertinent questions, which Mr. Daniel has again, in effect, repeated today. And that is, among others, the question whether a recovered alcoholic can really assume a, quote, normal, close quote, position in society, or whether he's to be confined in his social life to the group of Alcoholics Anonymous to which he belongs. I say this was written back in 1947. And I'm sure that if Mr. Ritchie, who wrote this paper, would attend one of these international conventions, he would quickly recognize that AAs, generally speaking, have been able to assume their proper roles in society and have become, in many, many instances, much better people, much better citizens than they ever would have been had they not been alcoholics at all. I'm delighted, too, Mr. Daniel, to know that someday this disease with which I am afflicted will be called an honorable illness. I tell you, there wasn't very much honor about it at the time that I became associated with AA. Now, as far as the doctors are concerned, I think one of the difficulties is that drunks are so obnoxious. And irrespective of how enlightened a professional man such as an MD or a preacher may be, and irrespective of his enlightened point of view about alcoholism as being a disease, I have yet to see any doctor who welcomed a drunk in his ante room. And I'm talking now about a guy who's really drunk, not just an alcoholic. And I'm sure the same thing goes with the preachers. So I think it'll be some time, Mr. Daniel, before we can really say that this cooperation between AA and these other agencies has reached its peak. You're so right about the tyranny of words, as you recall, was the subject of a book by Stuart Chase many years ago, and I know, as you do, that a word today may connote something entirely different than the word may connote tomorrow for a particular person. Thank you very much, sir, for being so gracious as to appear on this program.